Welcome to another episode of the Homestead Shop Talk podcast with Al from Lumna Acres, Ben from Holler Homestead, and myself, Jason from Sold the Land, and we are hanging out in the shop today. And this is episode 39, and today we have a topic today. Amazing. So we were just talking before we got on, and I already forgot. Can you be a doomsday prepper and a homesteader at the same time? Does that sound right, guys?
Yep. So those two mindsets like collide. Can you do it all at once?
Yes. And we're going to talk about that. But first, let's get into what we got going on currently and what we did this week. So how have you guys' week been?
It's been a busy week. Honestly, like, I would have to like sit down and go over some notes of what the heck I did last week. It was such a busy week. And then this weekend was just like the cherry on top. And I don't know.
Yeah.
I worked on the footer for the house a little bit. Worked in the garden a little bit. Forgot about my peppers. Forgot to bring them in. And the next morning got up and we had had a frost and they were all mush. So I got to restart all my peppers. And then this weekend we went and helped some friends butcher a couple pigs. So that was what we did this weekend. We were about elbow deep. Oh, I don't know. It was like Friday evening when we got there, Friday afternoon, and we processed them. I'll have to send you some pictures of my friend's cool trailer he built. It looks like a tiny home. Like, it's the most beautiful thing like I have ever seen. It's fancy got like fridge. Yeah, it's like the world's fanciest fridge. Enough room to hang two whole pigs. Like, it's got space. If you want to, you could actually set up a table inside the trailer and process inside the trailer if you wanted. I mean, it's slick. It's cool. I'll have to ask him if he minds if I share pictures of it. But, yeah, pretty cool. Pretty cool setup. Kind of made me a little bit jealous. Seeing everybody's setups is kind of something that's nice because it gives you ideas how you want to do it when you get to it and stuff like that. Yep. I know that we want to make a walk-in. We've been talking about building a shop, and we'll probably do a walk-in of some kind. But, yeah, I don't know. We'll cross that bridge when we get there. But it definitely made me jealous. I'm looking forward to the day that I can build something as awesome as that. But yeah.
What the trailer used to be?
The trailer, I think, like, it was an old kind of junky trailer, but the axles were good, and you know, it wasn't all rusted out. It was like a little, I would assume it was probably like a 10-foot trailer, something like that. Okay. And he went in and basically built a house, insulated it, and then did the CoolBot thing.
You could stand up in it?
Oh, yeah. It had eight-foot ceilings, like at the lowest point. Yeah. It was 8 feet. Pretty tall.
Cool.
It honestly either looked like a tiny home or like a catering trailer of some kind.
Yep. Yeah. That's cool.
So, yeah, that was kind of my week in a nutshell.
How's the weather been down your guys' way?
It was hot there for a minute.
Yeah, it was hot, like Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, something like that.
It was like 70s.
It was pretty hot. But I think it got up to 80 on Thursday. It was nasty.
Oh, wow.
I'm not ready for that.
Yeah, that's the day we put the plastic on our high tunnel.
Nice.
On the hottest day of the week.
Perfect.
It was nice.
How'd it go?
I got sunburned. It went pretty good. At first, I was like, okay, we were starting to put it on, and then it wasn't windy the whole day. And all of a sudden, it starts to get windy. And I was like, oh, man. For a minute there, I was kind of like, man, I don't know if we could do this, which is us three. You know, it was just us three doing it. But then we just kept at it, and then finally the wind died down a little bit, so we were able to do it. And it wasn't that bad. My concern was it not being tight enough, but it actually turned out really good. I was happy with it. I thought it was pretty tight. And so the whole top's on now. The next step is putting the two end walls on. But essentially, I mean, we could start growing into it right now, you know, or start bringing soil in.
Did you buy the end walls, or are you going to build them?
I bought one end wall kit. I think it's like a the whole thing rolls up. Okay. And then the other side, I was going to build one. I wanted to just do something different than having two same end walls. I'm not sure what I'm going to do yet. So are you guys ever behind on videos, posting videos? Or you guys got a pretty good schedule going?
What do you mean by that, I guess?
Like this video that you post today, you actually filmed it 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, we're like a week behind.
A week behind?
Yep.
I mean, you guys are pretty on a schedule, Ben, aren't you?
Like, yeah, we're pretty much on a schedule. I think there's like a 1 day delay thereabout.
Yeah. But you get a time honestly, to edit and then post.
Yeah, it's a little bit easier when there's like, you know, a week in between things. But yeah, generally right now we're pretty current.
Yeah, so right about now in the year is why I start being a week or two behind. So the things I like, this high tunnel video probably won't happen till next week. I probably won't post it till next week. Just because, you know, you got a lot of stuff going on and I got to sit down and edit. And, you know, sometimes if things happen like back to back to back, like every single day, and I don't want to miss it, I have to film it.
Yep.
But then that takes away my edit day. And so I have a ton of stuff that I need to edit that I've already filmed. But
do you miss uploading days then?
Oh yeah. I mean, I don't have a schedule. I really don't have a schedule of what day I upload. I mean, I try to keep it, but you know, sometimes it doesn't work out. And I just skip a couple days or 3 days and I get to it when I get to it, you know. It bugs me sometimes, but I do kind of like being at least a week behind.
Yep.
Because I feel like I'm less rushed, you know, sometimes I'll get like, oh my gosh, I gotta film something. Like I have nothing to post. In my brain, I start like almost panicking, like, cause I don't have anything to post for like, it's been like 3 or 4 days. So being a week behind, but then at the same time, when I start being 2 weeks behind, I tend to start forgetting what I filmed.
Yep.
And that's what gets kind of crazy because I don't even remember what I filmed and I still have to edit it. I mean, as I'm editing it, I'm reminding myself what I just did, but it's still kind of confusing. So yeah, so the high tunnel, man, this week was busy for us. We have chickens come in. We had 60 meat chickens come in. We had 25 egg layers come in. Nobody died in transit.
Awesome.
Nice.
So they're in the brooder currently. What else? We're waiting on.
Did you get any extras?
The meat chickens, we got two extra, and those two already died.
Yep.
They died after, like, I think 3 days after they came. The egg layers, I think they gave us one extra maybe. And those seem to be doing fine. We're on baby piglet watch, coonie pigs. Of course, we're having a cold spell this week. And so she should, I mean, if our math is correct, she should be due this Sunday.
Oh, nice.
So we'll see. We moved her to a spot where we need her. If we need to run an extension cord out there for a heat lamp, we could do that. I'm trying to remember what we did last year for her. Because last year, too, she had the pigs right around the same time. And it was really cold, but she seemed to do fine.
Was she right on time last year, like close to her due date?
She was, I mean, Lorraine, she's, I don't know, she's good at figuring out when she's going to have these babies. Because she's like, oh, she was in heat this day. And, you know, she starts doing the math and she's like, okay, the end of March, she's supposed to be due. So, what else? Oh, I had sheep milk for the first time.
What'd you think?
Cool.
It tastes like milk. It wasn't. I don't know what I was expecting, but it honestly, I don't think you could tell the difference between cow's milk and sheep milk. At least I don't think we could have. I mean, even that same day, I got it from Red Bell Ridge Farm, which is the farm I get my feed from. I would go, they're dealers, feed dealers. My feed dealer.
Dealer. Went to my dealer.
Yeah.
Some raw milk while I was there.
Yeah. She's like, try this. And they give me a glass jar full of sheep milk. They just started milking some sheep. So they're kind of new to it too. So they're like, try it. Let me know how it goes. So I took it home. And that same day, Lorraine went and picked up raw milk from our raw milk dealer. And we tried them both and they taste the same to me. I mean, even the same like consistency, you know, it wasn't water, more watery or thicker or anything like that. So
would you get cream from sheep's milk, or is it like goat's milk where it's homogenized naturally?
I'm not sure. They did say there is cream, but there was not cream in this. So I don't know. Okay. It might be kind of like goat's milk. I don't think as maybe not as much cream.
Yep.
But I don't know. I don't know. I think we want to try it. I want to try milking some sheep. I think we might try it.
What breed do they have?
It starts with a C. I think it's like Clun Forest, something like that. They're like a wool sheep.
Okay.
So they have to shear them.
Yep.
So I think you can have them for milk, meat, wool. But yeah, they're still kind of new at it too, so they're trying to feel it out. But they're using a milking machine to milk these sheep.
Yep.
So I was like, well, I need to go check it out because it seems interesting. It seems less intimidating than a cow, I feel.
But the cow, you get cream. And you can make butter and ice cream.
Well, apparently you could do this too with sheep.
That was the biggest downfall of goats is you got milk. And that was it. And you didn't get a ton of it. With the cow, at least you get a lot of it and you can make lots of different things.
I guess that's it. Probably if you're going to milk something, you might as well milk a cow and get all of it. Get a bunch. Maybe.
I don't know. When you can have ice cream every week, mm-hmm. you start seeing the benefits of having a cow.
Yes, and the butter and
I mean apparently you could do all that with sheep, but I don't know. I haven't done neither, so what do I know?
Yeah, it'd be interesting to find out like how much milk you get per sheep kind of thing.
Yeah I forget what they told me, but
so if you got a cow, you'd have a bunch of excess milk, you'd have cream for ice cream, you'd have a ton of milk for your pigs, I guess. Yes. That'd be interesting. Could you give your coonies milk, or they get too fat on that? I wonder.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question because they are a lard pig.
Yeah.
If that's even, maybe if that's all you gave them, just feed them milk and let them graze, or even feed them less grain. That might be a thing. That'd be interesting. So I've been trying to finish my fence. I'm kind of over my fence, but I need to just go out there and just get it done. I'm trying to force myself to get up super early and just stay outside and just try to keep at it.
Power through. Pretty much.
Yeah, exactly. Like one side of the, I'm putting high tensile the rest of the wire. One side is pretty much done. I could charge it or energize it right now if I wanted to. So I'm just like, keep going, and I feel like it's almost there. I just have to do the little details on putting it all together. But
you just need to like go find some animals and be like, okay, I'll pick them up in a week or two, and give yourself a hard deadline so you have to get it done.
That's how it is, right?
Yeah.
I know. That's how it works. I work better under pressure, I feel.
Yep.
Let's see. So we picked up feed. We picked up a bunch of broiler feed. So that should, you know, so 2,000 pounds, I figured it should be enough for 4 rounds of Cornish cross chickens. So 4 rounds of 30 for 2,000 pounds. It should be like just enough. And that's why I went with the Cornish cross this year, because, man, you can't beat the turnaround. And it is cheaper, you know, than the Red Rangers. You just can't beat it. Let's see. So with feed, I mean, this happened all this week, guys. I mean, we picked up 35 yards of compost.
Whoa.
You went and got it?
For the high tunnel. I had it delivered.
Okay, yep.
I found a place, a local market gardener that I met, that I know, he's a farm, he uses this compost, and I had it, I mean, it came from 3 hours away.
Oh, wow.
And I mean, it's hard to find mm-hmm. people to deliver stuff where we're at, because we're kind of in a no man's land over here. But it was still a lot cheaper than what other places I've seen. And I figure if this market gardener is using this stuff and he's growing vegetables and selling them, I'm like, well, it must be at least decent. So now I have a pile of soil sitting in my side of my backyard that I need to move to the high tunnel.
How far from the high tunnel?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe 100, 200 feet or something.
Yep.
So we'll see how that goes, but at least I have it, and because we need it, because that soil where it's at, it's like super hard, I'm not growing anything. I need to add to it in that high tunnel.
How many dump truck loads
was that? It was one. Oh, it was a long, it was like the max that that truck could hold, I guess.
Yeah.
And he was able to back up and just dump it.
Cool. That must have been a big dump truck.
It was big. I didn't think it was going to be that big when I saw it, because I thought, oh yeah, it should have no problem. And then he showed up and I was like, but he backed it up no problem. Like, he didn't even bat an eye. He was just like, all right, that's where you want it. Okay.
It's so awesome.
He was good at what he did. We managed to go to a farmer's market this weekend, Asheville Farmer's Market. Didn't really buy anything except for apple cider. They didn't really have anything. We just went just to go.
Still kind of early in the season for a farmer's market.
Yeah, it's a year-round farmer's market, which is crazy. They have their two big farmer's markets are both year-round, and they're 10 minutes from each other.
Oh, wow.
And we went to one, and we couldn't even find parking because there was, like, a line of cars to park. And we're like, oh, forget it. Let's go to the next one. So we went to the next one, and that one had better parking. And even though it was, like, their off-season, they still had quite a bit there. I remember a lot of people just walking around. They didn't really, I mean, it has a few veggies. Maybe two people were selling meat. No chicken. I don't see any chicken, like whole chicken or anything like that. But like one guy I saw, he was raising organic grass-fed pork. I'm always amazed by people who sell that because, you know, the feed's expensive.
Yep.
Especially for pigs. And it's like, they're doing it, whether they're doing great or not, I don't know, but they're selling it.
What was the price per pound on some of the meat for the pork? Did you see that?
No.
No.
I don't remember. Yeah, they were trying to sell CSAs, I think, mainly.
Yep.
I don't think they were selling it individually, so I think they were trying to sell like wholes and halves pretty much, and
yep,
subscription type things. Yeah. I think that's about it. So what's up, Al? Is it snowing still?
It's been flurrying on and off today. Yep. On Thursday, I think it was Thursday, we were like high 50s, almost 60. And then, yeah, it's just been getting cold since. So we had a nice, warm, sunny day. We had some warm, sunny day, or warmer sunny days. And then Thursday was like almost 60. And then it's just been getting cold ever since. But on the flip side, we butchered our sheep this, what day did I do that? I did that Saturday. And then we had nice cold weather. So I was able to hang her outside for till today. So I was like, I'll take advantage of the colder weather for sure.
So who butchered it? You did?
Cooperated.
I know. I was surprised. Yeah, I harvested her Saturday myself and then hung her up. And then today we took her down and then we cut her up today during the day. So I got a question for you, Ben. Do you find a sheep is easier to do everything? Not the cutting up of the meat, but of the skinning in the gutting than a pig?
I don't know. I don't know if that's like fair. Doing a sheep to me was just like doing a deer. Actually, like when the sheep I did last year, I actually went and got the air compressor to see if you could blow the hide off the body, and it somewhat worked. So I mean, I thought that was kind of cool, but yeah, I'm not sure. I think any animal you can skin that has a hide is just easier and quicker.
Yep.
And then, you know, having the rumen, everything just comes out in pretty much one big chunk. I thought the sheep were pretty easy. We did them pretty quick. They were pretty straightforward. I mean, I wasn't scared of them. First time I ever got my hands inside of a pig, it was a little intimidating, but I don't know, the sheep, pretty straightforward, I guess.
That's what I thought. I thought the sheep was a lot easier. What was that, Jason?
How'd you kill him?
I did it with my 410.
Oh, you shot him?
Oh, yeah. Well, it was just one. Yeah.
They didn't move? There. It was pretty
easy? I put some, she came, so we have a bunch of different spots in the field, and she came down to one of the lower spots by herself, and I just put a little bit of food up. She went to eat it, and lights out.
That's the only one you have, right?
Yeah. We had two. One of them died right away pretty much from worms. And then she made it through.
What, you know the pounds?
So 114 hanging weight And then once I took the hide and the head off, she weighed 86. And then once she was down to everything, she was 51 pounds.
It's amazing how much weight you lose with, guts and skin and all that.
Yeah, I was like, wow. I thought it was a lot easier to do that part versus a pig. But I feel like when we were cutting the meat up, it was a slower process than a pig because everything's so much smaller
Yeah, I'll
versus
give you
where
that.
you get, it's so much more time consuming because you're holding a bunch of little stuff. You don't have like the weight of the carcass or of your primal cuts holding stuff. You kind of have to, I don't know. It was maybe a little more tedious cutting up the sheep until it cuts the
Yeah.
meat.
See, when we did sheep, I kind of cut realistically for our family. And one big sheep I could actually get decent cuts out of, but the two smaller sheep that I did were so small. I broke it down into just like quarters and we just packed those up. It was like holding up one leg. It's like, yeah, this is one meal, maybe. And so I just wrapped up the legs and stuck them in the freezer. And sure enough, I'm glad I did because like one leg is a meal for us.
Right. Yeah, I'd say she was medium size. So we got like the loins, tenderloin. We did some boneless stuff. Then we got the chops. One side I did chops, and the other side I did rack of, what do they call it? Rack of lamb or lamb rack, whatever. But yeah, on the smallest, when you're cutting everything up, it's kind of, you got to be more precise than a pig because a pig, you have more room to work with, it seems like.
Did you do it all in a day, the cut up part?
Yep. Yeah, it took us almost all day to cut up. We did grinding and cutting and filming and packing and
Yeah. Did you film it?
yeah, we did.
Oh, nice.
Yep.
And you did it all in your new barn or in the house?
We did it. So I did the harvesting part outside in the barn, used the meat pole, and then we brought it in the house and just did it right in the kitchen island, which was nice.
The meat pole.
The meat pole. So I hung it up in the air like 12 feet off the ground, probably, the meat pole
You
in
should
this
have
cave.
some. You should have some T-shirts made and just have it say "meat pole" like
Meat
in the
pole.
chest. Let people ask, like, what does that mean?
What is this? You'll have to come to my house and I'll show you my meat pole.
Ask me,
Ask
and
me
I'm
about
like,
my meat
it's yeah,
pole.
that's a bumper
Bring out the inner
sticker. That's a
12-year-old in all of
bumper
us.
I know. Oh my gosh.
I took our dog to the vet for the first time this week. He ended up weighing 34 pounds. So he's bigger than our miniature Australian Shepherd, almost weighs as much as our double doodle. And he was what, 13, 14 weeks old when I brought him?
It's a big puppy.
Yep.
It's gonna be big.
And that's the goal. We wanted the biggest one we could get.
Brutus.
Brutus, to scare off the coyotes.
That's great.
He's doing good. It's fun training him. So we'll see how it goes. So far, he hasn't come in the house yet. So he's living in the barn. He stays in the barn at night. And then right now, he's out in the day. When we're working, he's with us. And then he's out in the kennel right near the cows during the day to watch him.
So those dogs, I mean, they're basically gonna work mainly at night,
So yeah, they're supposedly
and
nocturnal.
then during the day they're just kind of chilled out.
Yep, they're usually doing a lot of their sleeping during the day. But so far, I don't know if it's because he's a puppy or not, but he's active during the day.
You let him roam around at night?
Now, right now, we just put him in the barn.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
Trying to teach him that this is his area, like this is where he needs to stay. Because there's so many different things, different ways to train him. We want him to roam at night, but we want him to roam near the animals. We don't want him taking off and roaming the woods. You know what I mean? We want him
Yeah.
by the animals, protecting the animals, and not just
Right.
going, hey, I'm going to go browse the woods and come back in the
Exactly.
morning kind of thing. So we're trying to teach him, like, no, this is home base, stay close. So
Right.
I think thinking about getting a GPS tracking collar for him. So that way, if he does roam and I can't find him, at least I can pull up my phone and find him, but also go, oh, hey, this is where he was all night long. Like, this is the loop he did, or kind of see what's up with
Yeah.
that. I think that'd be kind of cool.
That'd be
Yeah, like
really cool.
why is he in this spot all the time? Or maybe
Right.
there's something over there.
Yeah. What did he do all
Yeah.
night long?
That would be neat. That would be a neat video to do, to see if you can make that into a
I'm sure you could.
video.
Might take a couple of days, but
Yeah.
yeah.
It'd be cool if it had like some kind of video camera on them or something.
Right. That would be kind of neat. Put a little, like, strap a GoPro on him too with, like, night vision at night.
See what he's up to. You would think, like, it'll work like a GPS. Like, you can look on your phone and you, like, it'll be like 2 a.m. and you can look on a camera night vision or something and have it's on him and seeing what he sees. Like, yep. Don't they have that? All right, I don't know.
They might. It probably costs a lot of money, but they might have something.
Yeah. I mean, that would be neat.
Yep.
You would think they would have something like that already.
We'll start doing our new fencing down by the barn. I'm just doing T-post, and then we're gonna do high tension wire. So I think 3 strands. And then we're doing wedge locks. I don't know if you guys have heard of those for our corner braces. So they're little metal brackets that you put on your T-post. So you got your 2 T-posts, and then you put a bracket up here on this side, and then one down low on this side, and you run your diagonal T-post. So it keeps them for your gate.
Are they plastic?
No, they're aluminum.
Oh, okay.
I wish they were metal, because they're 3 pieces, and one of the pieces I wish I could tack on, but I don't have anything to weld aluminum myself. So
those are the corners.
Those will be the I'm not doing it in the corners. If I need to do it in the corners, I will. Right now, I'm doing that where the gates are. So for the gates, we're just doing metal, well, not metal gates. We're doing wire gates, but we're doing like the spring-loaded gates. So it's like a spring coil. So it will stretch from like 1 foot to 16 feet.
Oh, yeah, I've seen those. Those are cool. Yeah,
they work out pretty slick so far, but they put a lot of tension on the T-post. So you need to have a brace on the sides, so you're not ripping your T-post out of the ground.
What's the fence for?
So the fence is going to be for our cows we have now, and then we went and looked at more livestock. We actually didn't even film it. We took the day off, and we should be getting them in like a month. So,
oh really?
We're not filming. We're gonna go check. We didn't know if we were gonna get them yet, so we're like, we're gonna go check them out. I don't know. We're gonna go to another farm. They don't know who we are. Oh, we don't think they know who we are, kind of thing. We just want to go incognito, look at animals, see if they're what we want, kind of thing. So, like, we're not going to take any cameras.
So you bought some livestock?
We put a deposit on the livestock.
And you don't want to say what they are?
No, not yet.
Okay.
No, we got some testing we haven't done.
Come on, camel.
Come on, camel. That'd be nice. People, I think that was supposed to be a big thing for a while, is camel milk. I've never had that.
Oh, that should be fun.
So I guess going into tonight's topic, so this is what got me thinking. I think a lot of people correlate homesteaders being preppers. So can you have like a hardcore prepper mindset and still be a homesteader? So my thinking is like, yes, we try to prepare for a lot of things. Like, I guess like a Boy Scout, like be prepared. I am prepared kind of thing. But can you have the prepper mindset, like the doomsday prepper mindset, but still have a homestead or a farm? Because I feel like if you have a homestead / farm, you got to plan for the future. So if you're like that kind of prepper, can you really plan for the future? I don't know. Like just thinking about like cows take, what is it, 9 months to get them pregnant. And then if you want to raise them out for beef, it's 2 years. You got to raise them up on grass for beef. So there's a lot of planning and processing and everything. So if you're like a prepper, are you thinking that far ahead, I guess?
Don't they? I always thought they did.
I don't know. Like if you're planning for the end of the world, are you planning for growing like a big farm, like for the future? Or are you just planning to
what if zombie apocalypse happens?
Yeah.
Like, getting prepared for zombie apocalypse, not I want to have, I don't know, canned vegetables next year. Right. I don't know. I feel like you could do both. One of them is more hardcore than the other, I guess. Couldn't you set aside some stuff and have both?
Yeah, but I don't know. Like we're always, I think, preparing for stuff, but I'm not preparing for the apocalypse, I guess. Like, I don't know. To me, I guess I think of that. You're going to have like a bunch of freeze-dried food in your basement and you're going to be going in your bunker. I don't want to live that way.
No, no.
I guess I don't think about that end of it. What do you think, Ben?
I don't know. It's an interesting idea. Like, can you still be a homesteader if you're a doomsday prepper? I think what's weird is like we didn't really get into homesteading because we were preppers,
right?
But homesteading is kind of a way to prep. this is more of a way of life. Well, I suppose so is being a prepper. I don't know. I think absolutely you can. There's nothing wrong with being prepared in any situation, in any way of life. If you want to grow your vegetables and can a whole bunch of them so you have a couple years saved up, like, there's no shame in that. I don't know. I guess, yeah, you can absolutely be a prepper and a homesteader. I guess one just doesn't have as much fear attached to it.
Right.
Yeah, maybe everyone just has their different why.
Yeah, I guess it would come down to a why. Like,
right.
Why are you, if you're homesteading because you're worried about the end of the world, I don't know about you, but I've known some serious preppers, and they sit there waiting for the end of the world, and, you know, it's supposed to come on this date, and it never happens, and 10 years go by, and they're like, you know what? This is dumb. Forget it. There's one guy, he just got rid of all of his stuff. Like, he just walked away from the whole prepper stuff. And I couldn't understand why. I was like, you know, at least eat your stockpiled food. If you all of a sudden you're not worried about the end of the world, like, that's a lot of time and money invested into all that stuff. But I don't know. He just, like, rejoined society in his thinking. So I don't know.
I'll be a homesteader then. Yeah. Or you could maybe the opposite, like, maybe you get into homesteading and then that turns you into a hardcore prepper, you know, then you really start getting into it. Maybe that, I'm sure people have those way of doing it, but
I think if you get into homesteading, you kind of stop, I shouldn't say that. If you move to the country and you're homesteading, you start learning, like, oh yeah, wait, like, I want to have food for, you know, at least 2 weeks or something, just because, oh, you can't go, you're not running to the store all the time. You're not going here, there, you know, for us, we get snowstorms, so you want to make sure we have food. Like, we don't panic, like, oh my gosh, we're getting a blizzard, we better go to the grocery store and stock up and buy out all the bread and milk like everybody else does.
Yeah. Or even just, you know, if you have an abundance, if you grow an abundance of something, and, you know, next year you're probably not going to grow the same abundance, you know, unless you're, you know, you might just luck out 1 year and grow a ton of tomatoes or whatever, and you just start canning them. You know, that's, you know, that's how you get into it. But I remember one time, this was some years ago, I met a hardcore prepper guy, and he wanted me to build him a walk-in cooler. And that was when I had just built Justin Rhodes' cooler. And then right after I finished that one, he got a hold of me. He was like, hey, I want you to build me a cooler. Turned out he lived, like, really close by me, so I went to go check out where he wanted me to build it. And he was a prepper. I mean, he was expecting something to happen. he had a, you know, greenhouse. I mean, he was on some acreage. He took me on a little tour. He had, like, a whole lookout tower. Yeah, like, it was wild. It was, I kind of felt like the A-team or something. it never happened. I think it was just right before COVID happened, and so it seemed like when that I was gonna do it, like, the next day I was ready to go. Like, I was okay, this is what we're doing. And the day before, he says, like, you know what, I don't want to do it anymore, you know, let's just wait. So I don't know what ever happened, but
you moved away,
maybe. But you're just kind of interesting to meet people, you know. I mean, it was cool, like, he was prepared for something, but I think it's probably, yeah, maybe it's just a mindset thing, I guess.
I think, I mean, I like what Ben had to say, it's your why, I guess. Yeah, probably more than anything.
See, right, I've kind of find myself in a weird position. The amount of food that we have to stockpile for our family looks like 25 years of food, but it's really only 6 months for us. So I mean, like, we've had people, like, walk around and go, why do you need so many bags of flour? And it's like, oh, because this is, you know, the next 3 months. Like, we just stocked up.
That's true.
And that's true. So, I mean, to other people, we look like preppers. And it's like, well, I wouldn't say we're preppers. We're just prepared. We like to stock up, that kind of stuff. Yep. Not to say that, you know, we wouldn't be all right if something hit the fan and couldn't go anywhere. Like, we got food. But I think the most important thing is, because of the homesteading thing, we are growing our own food. We're currently in the middle of kind of doing a count of what percentage do we eat that we have grown, you know, our day-to-day diet. You know, what is our daily amount that we eat, that we produced? Right now, it's kind of a rough time of year because there's no garden right now. Garden's not going to be producing for another at least a month. And so right now there's a lot of grains. There's a lot of, you know, the imports, you know, all the things that we can't grow. But as we get into summer, well, yeah, there's a lot more stuff that we eat out of the garden, and then the meat and everything. We'll switch over and be eating all homegrown versus how it is now, where it's like, well, really only the meat and the occasional can of green beans on a, you know, odd Friday night or something came off the land. So I don't know. I don't know where I was going with that. I forgot where I was going.
But back to your point with, like, you guys stocking up with, like, flour and stuff. We have a food co-op that we go grocery shopping at, and they'll have, like, member days. You'll get 10% off. And it seems like whenever they have member days, they have a huge sale on a lot of stuff. And then you'll have like a dollar off coupon for a lot of stuff. So we'll go in there and just stock up on all the stuff. And they're like, they get up to the counter and they're like, oh, you have 10 bags of frozen broccoli. You got, yeah, I got a freezer at my house. You guys have the stuff on sale. Why would I not stock up? Like, yeah. It's like, this is just common sense, people. Like, so I don't think a lot of people shop that way. It's like, I'm going to save money. I'm going to put it back in my freezer because we're getting low anyways. Why wouldn't I?
Yeah.
But I just think that's like a funny response when you go up, especially when you're going to the cash register and like the cashier's like, what are you doing?
Like, I don't want to come here once a week.
Right.
I want to come here once a month and stock up.
Man, that just reminded me of back when, you know, we were broke in our early marriage. We didn't have a lot extra, and any meat we had, we bought the markdowns. And there was one grocery store that every, I don't know, 6 months to a year, they would put ground beef on sale for 99 cents a pound, which was a screaming deal. And we would go buy, I think they had a limit or something, but we would go fill up a shopping cart with just ground beef. And we'd get up there to the counter and the clerks would be horrified. They'd be like, are you making burgers for like a football team or something? Like, this is so much ground beef. And it was the same thing. It's like, we got a freezer. We're going to, you know, take these big packs, these 10-pound packs, and we're going to break them up into single pounds. And this is our ground beef for the year. Like, it's just stocking up. But that is so foreign and alien to so many people. It's actually kind of sad if you think about it, that seeing someone prepare, seeing someone, you know, look ahead to the future or just stock up because it's a good price is unusual.
Yep.
I think some people just really like going to the grocery store once a week.
There's people that go daily.
Like, it's a highlight. Like shopping, you know, just, I like going shopping. Like, I'm just going to go walk around the grocery store and drink a coffee or something.
Drink a coffee or something. I don't know.
In Asheville, you could buy, you know, you could drink a beer while you shop. So,
yep.
It's relaxing.
I've heard, I don't know, we don't have one around here, but I've heard that their Costco has, I think they're called business centers, and you can go and buy like hanging halves of beef or good size parts.
Really?
And then you can butcher it yourself. So it's less expensive, and it'd be a good way to learn butchering skills if you wanted to.
Dude, that'd be neat.
Right. I guess like restaurants, you know, restaurants go there, they buy their hanging, I don't know if it's half, quarters, must be, I think it's different, but I think you can buy like whole sheep carcasses just hanging. Hey,
why don't grocery stores do more of that?
They used to. There was, I'm trying to think where I heard it on a podcast.
That was Billy's podcast. That was Spearco. He was talking about Sam's Club's meat supply thing. I'd have to go check out that episode, but it's the episode of the Billy's podcast with Jack Spearco. Yeah.
There was an old one. You can't just ask. Like, just go to a grocery store, just ask them, like, I don't want it cut up.
But they don't get it that way anymore, the grocery store.
They have it already cut up?
They have it already cut up. So there was a different, I don't think it was the same podcast. I don't remember whose it was, but they were listening, And they're like, what we need to do to make like our food more like our communities more self-reliant is that's what we need to bring back is like the grocery stores getting like half a cow from the butcher and they could get local meat that way. But the grocery stores don't, like the most grocer butchers don't even know how to cut up meat anymore because that's not what they do.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah,
they just get packaged meat.
Then what do they do?
I don't know.
What does a butcher do now? Just stock shelves?
They slice deli meat, I think, now.
They just weigh it for you, and that's it.
Right. Yeah.
That would be interesting, though, if you started a grocery store or something, or if you're like a small grocery store and just, you know, half a cow, and somebody could buy that.
Right.
And save some money.
Yeah. I wonder, the grocery store, they could go to like a local butcher shop or a local butcher, and they could buy half a cow or a whole cow, and they could just bring it to the grocery store. I wonder how much money a grocery store could save doing that way then, like, versus buying it from one of the big packers, if it would be comparable or not.
Right. I mean, I guess they probably would lose money, you think?
Yeah, I don't know. Probably.
Because they're not buying it per piece.
Right. But that's what one of the podcasts was talking about. They were like, basically, a way to bring back, like, the food industry to more localize it. An easy way to do it would be to bring back the local butcher shops in the yeah. local grocery stores.
Yeah, that's interesting. I see like little mom and pop stores doing that, but not like big chain ones. If they can't even order meat like that, I don't know.
Right, and say, I wonder where the big mom, well, the small mom and pop stores, I wonder where they get the meat like that. If they find a local butcher that they get it from, or a local farm, or what they do.
That's another thing that we need to start. What has it been? Along with the notary? Notary in the back?
It'll be bulk supplies, bulk yard, equipment rentals, butcher services, and notary.
Yeah. Yeah, add it to the list.
You come out with your white lab coat on, all bloody. Let me notarize that for you.
Yeah. Yes, and there's a post office in the back.
Post office in the back.
Heck yeah, man. All in one shop. Actually, it's funny. Have you guys heard of a tool library?
No.
There's a tool library, and actually, Asheville has one. And I was looking how to start one. And I've been to the one in Asheville, but it's kind of like a, you know, like a book library, except you rent tools, but you don't. It's like a membership almost. I guess it's kind of like a co-op.
Yep.
Where you pay like a yearly fee, and the yearly fee can be, I mean, some of these libraries, they charge maybe $50 for a whole year.
Oh, wow.
And you don't need to pay anything extra to rent a tool. It's just $50 for the whole year, and you can rent any tool that you want.
That's kind of cool.
And you can rent it for like a week, I think, at least. I mean, of course, they have like, I think they have like some late fees and stuff like that, but it's like minimal, you know? It's basically kind of your borrowing rather than paying, you know, $100 to rent this thing. And I was looking at like, how do you actually start one of those? Not that I really needed to look into that, but I was curious, you know, because I liked the idea and the concept of it, and I was wondering what that actually looked like, how to start one. And there's different things online that you could look at that show you how to do it. But I think they actually started having them, I think, in the 70s, and they were attached to an actual, like a book library. They were kind of in the same building. I think they started in San Francisco, and you could rent out tools instead of books, which I thought was pretty neat.
That's pretty cool. I've never heard of a tool library.
The one I went to, this was some years ago in Asheville, I think they had just started, and I went there, you know, because Home Depot, they rent tools. And I needed to rent something. I forget what it was. I think it was a tiller. And I found out about that place, and I went there, and everything I wanted to rent, it was broken. I was like, well, I like the idea, but the tools can't be broken if I want.
Right.
You know, like they need to work. They need to be functional. So then I just ended up going to Home Depot. But, you know, I mean, the idea is there. And that place is still there, still running. So maybe they were kind of brand new then, so... That probably would be the drawback, is that you got to repair these tools. You know, I'm sure they get used a ton and abused and stuff. So,
I've never seen anybody treat a rental tool with kindness and respect. You drive it, you ride it like it's stolen.
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know. That was kind of cool to look into. Who knows?
I just did a Google search. We don't have one near us.
I want to say I looked at, there's maybe 40 or 50 of them in the country.
It's like one a state.
Yeah. I think there's only one in North Carolina.
That would be the hard part. Like you said, like getting the tools back in good condition or make sure they were still running and they weren't beat up kind of thing.
Yeah. Or even getting tools, like enough of them to rent out like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought that would be pretty cool. I don't know. I have a handful of tools here. I would just rent out.
The worst part is a lot of the tools, everybody needs them around the same time, like rototillers or chicken pluckers.
Yep.
Yes.
They're seasonal.
But there was one tool library I saw. I think it's in I don't know where it is, somewhere out west, Portland maybe. I mean, there's like grants that you could apply for and stuff. That
interesting.
Like this one library applied for a grant. It was a Craftsman was putting out this grant, and they I forget it was like $20,000 or something, and they spent the whole $20,000 on all brand new Craftsman tools. So you look in their, you know, they had video of their library, and it's just all battery operated, brand new. It looked like a, you know, looked like a Lowe's. You're walking into Lowe's with all these brand new tools. But stuff like that, it's like, how do you know about this stuff? You know, as far as like grants and stuff like that, you know, there's stuff out there that people are willing to help you out with, but it's just trying to figure out what that looks like, you know, and where to look. Yep. I think that's what makes it hard.
Yeah, I wonder if there's like a place you can go and just like search grants to find that kind of stuff. For how, you know, how do these grant writers, and there's people, that's what they do for a career, they're grant writers.
Yeah.
And they work for nonprofits and stuff. But...
Right. So that's what I was doing on a late midnight. Looking up, how do you start this tool library? I'm gonna look this up. I'm like, man, I need to go to bed.
So this is what Jason does with his insomnia.
I know. That stuff interests me, how people start that up, man. You know, and hear stories of people's like, oh, we started that back up in 1980, you know. A group of people just got together and we wanted to rent tools, you know, and it's like, what? Like, that's, I find that so interesting.
Pretty cool. I'll have to look into tool libraries. That, honestly, like, if you could, like, be in a good community where people wouldn't just absolutely abuse stuff or steal it, like, I think it could work. But oh, yeah. certain communities might not. It just depends.
I feel like you have to charge for something to keep them honest.
Yeah,
keep people honest, you know, like you just can't be totally for free, you know. I'm just upkeep, like or what about, where are you gonna have this at? Like, there's got to be some kind of shop you got to be in,
right?
Or store or something, you know. That's you got to pay rent at least.
Somebody's gotta be there to kind of run it, keep an eye on stuff.
Yeah, that too.
Yep.
Gonna need a mechanic to fix the stuff that just needs to be you know, repaired. Yeah. Wear and tear type stuff.
To me, that seemed like the most, that's the biggest issue with these things, is that the wear and tear, and you need to hire somebody to repair these tools, or you need to send them to somebody and they repair them somewhere else. But that to me is like the biggest expense that these things have.
So the biggest thing I'm hearing is, if you've started or know somebody who started a tool library, reach out to Jason because he wants to know how to do that.
I might, yeah. Yeah, I do, actually.
Jason wants to know more, at least, before he stops.
I want to know what's going on. I want to know my options. I'd be like, well, I got a walk-in cooler trailer I'd rent out and a chicken plucker.
I think a membership would probably be the best way to do it, but it'd have to be, I think it has to be more than $50 a year, so that way you'd at least get people who respected stuff.
Yeah. And
again, if you're going to be charging a decent membership, you got to have some good tools, I guess, at the same time, so people would want to join.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how that works. See, I could probably reach out to somebody and ask them who's done it, but I haven't gone that far yet in the rabbit hole.
People are going to be emailing you now to this podcast. They're going to be like, back in the 80s, I started a tool library. This is how you do it.
Yeah. On that note, we'll end it there. All right. So I appreciate everyone listening and watching this podcast. And thank you so much. You know, we're almost at 40 episodes, which is pretty neat.
Yeah.
You know, just talking shop. Just, you know, little chin wag here and there. Never hurt no one. I appreciate everyone listening, watching, and I hope everyone has an awesome week, and we'll see you guys next week.
Have a good week.
Later.